Good morning, everyone. I am Si Xiang. Today, I'm going to present our work about how to achieve accurate timeout detection despite arbitrary processing delays. Actually, it is interesting that this could be part of the answer of the first question in the last, I guess it might be part of the answer to the first question in our last talk, hopefully. And this is a joint work with my advisor, Yang, from the Ohio State University. Many distributed systems, such as HDFS, Ceph, Zookeeper, and so on, they use timeout to do failure detection. Its basic idea is simple. The sender will periodically send heartbeats to receiver. And when it timeout and the heartbeats are missing on the receiver, then the receiver will suspect the sender as failed and do corresponding failure recovery actions. However, this mechanism doesn't provide accurate failure detection because a missing heartbeat can be either caused by the sender failure or that heartbeat is being delayed somewhere during a communication channel. And in this case, reporting failure will violate the accuracy property because the sender is actually still alive. To ensure system correctness, one solution is to use Paxos-based consensus algorithms, which can achieve correctness even though the timeout detection is inaccurate. However, this approach is usually more expensive and complex. Another solution to ensure system correctness is to set long timeout intervals to cover all the possible delays during the communication channel. And in this approach, because system correctness depends on the accuracy of failure detection, the users must provide a conservative estimation about the maximum delay of the communication channel. And in practice, systems like HDFS, Ceph, Yarn, they are using this approach. And our work aims to improve this approach. So I will skip. Timeout is widely used in many distributed systems. And timeout can happen, but it can be either triggered by the sender failure or the heartbeat is being delayed somewhere. And in the second case, the accuracy will be violated. And one solution to ensure system correctness is to use Paxos, but it's usually more expensive and complex. And another solution to ensure system correctness is to set a long timeout interval to cover all the possible delays in the communication channel. In this approach, because system correctness depends on the accuracy of failure detection, the users has to provide a conservative estimation about the maximum delay of the communication channel. And in practice, systems such as HDFS, Ceph, Yarn are using this approach. And our work aims to improve this approach. Despite its popularity and simplicity, there is one dilemma behind this approach, which is that users have to trade off between system availability and system correctness. On one hand, to achieve correctness, systems require long timeout intervals to tolerate long delays. On the other hand, for better system availability, systems prefer short timeout intervals for fast failure detection. In our work, we want to answer this question. Can we shorten timeout intervals without sacrificing correctness? And our work tries to break the dilemma based on two key motivations. First, delays in operating system and application can be significant, especially inside a data center. Secondly, there are opportunities to design better solutions for operating systems and application based on their white box nature. First, let me present the possible delays in the OS and application. Heartbeat processing can be delayed by a variety of events in operating system and application, as listed in this slide. These are the worst case delays we met in our own experiments, and as we can see, the delays can be up to several minutes. In addition, bug reports from our communities has confirmed our result. For example, HBase community suggests users to set zookeeper's timeout to 3 minutes to cover big garbage collection delay. In another example, HDF's developers reported that heartbeat sending can be delayed for more than 10 minutes. And with this example of long delays in mind here, I also listed some default timeout intervals for some distributed systems. And we can see that, in fact, the delays in OS and application are comparable, or even larger than many systems' default timeout intervals, which actually caused the problems in the previous slide. But fortunately, the white box nature of the operating system and application creates opportunities to design better solutions for timeout detection. Existing timeout protocols view the whole communication channel as a black box, which can only provide information when it receives a packet. And in this case, users have to set the timeout intervals longer than this estimated maximum delay of the whole communication channel. However, modeling the whole communication channel as a black box is too pessimistic. Compared to network layer, operating system and application can provide internal packet processing information such as packet job, packet pending, and therefore they can be viewed as a white box. And their white box nature raises a question for us. Can we design better solution by utilizing this white box nature? And if we can, then users do not need to include the maximum delay of the white box part into the timeout. And because such delays are quite significant, as what we just showed in the first motivation, this approach can significantly reduce the timeout intervals. And in the rest of my talk, I will present SiftTimer, our solution to answer this question. The goal of SiftTimer is to guarantee that when the receiver reports timeout, the sender must have failed. For accurate timeout detection in the white box, SiftTimer does not require any timing assumptions. And in other words, SiftTimer assumes that delays in the white box can be arbitrarily long. On the other hand, SiftTimer does rely on existing timeout protocols for the black box, which means that users still need to make timing assumptions about the black box. To achieve our goal, when timeout occurs at the receiver side, SiftTimer will double check whether there are any pending heartbeats or dropped heartbeats before reporting a failure. And for the sender side, when heartbeat sending is slow, SiftTimer will block the sender. We can prove that by combining these two mechanisms, SiftTimer can guarantee accurate failure detection as long as the protocol of the black box works correctly. In the next few slides, I will describe a SiftTimer solution for the receiver side first, beginning with a brief background of Linux networking packet receiving pipeline. In order to achieve fast packet receiving, Linux uses a concurrent pipeline design, which may reorder the packets from different connections at different stages. These boxes here with different colors indicates packets from different connections. After receiving some packets, the networking interface card will transfer the packets from the NISA to the kernel's room buffer. After that, The NIC will fire interrupts, which will be handled by interrupt handling procedure in a HotX context. For high concurrency, CPUs will handle interrupts from different queues in parallel, and this technique is called receive-side scaling in Linux. After interrupt is handled, kernel will read packets from ring buffers and execute networking protocols such as TCP/IP in a soft IQ context. In this stage, Linux incorporates another technique called receive packet steering to achieve higher concurrency. When this technique is enabled, kernel will queue the packets from one ring to multiple queues. Kernel will queue the packets from one ring buffer to multiple backlogs. After that, kernel will continue to probe packets and transfer them into the socket buffer concurrently. And eventually, user space threads can read these packets from socket buffer in parallel. In such a complex concurrent design, to check panning habits will be a challenging task because packets will be buffered and processed by threads in multiple stages. And the packets from different connections, the processing order can be reordered. When timeout occurs, one possible solution to check panning habits is to pass all the threads and scan all the buffers. However, this solution is not desirable because it requires intrusive modification to the networking stack and have negative impact on performance. Safe timer incorporates a non-blocking barrier mechanism, which requires little kernel modification and has small performance overhead. The key idea of our barrier mechanism is not complex. When timeout occurs, the receiver will send the barrier packets to itself. In addition, safe timer will force heartbeats and barrier packets to be executed in a FIFO order. By combining this, safe timer can ensure that when barriers are processed, heartbeats arrived before timeout must have been processed as well. To avoid the packet reordering, after kernel reads packets from ring buffer, safe timer will redirect heartbeats and barriers into a FIFO queue, which is called SDQ in our paper. Because kernel will lock the ring buffer in the soft IQ context, the FIFO order of each ring buffer can be preserved in our SDQ. Then, in order to ensure that we have checked all the panning habits from all the rings, safe timer will send the barrier packets to all the IX queues when timeout occurs. Following the FIFO channel, heartbeat packets and the barrier packets will be read from the ring buffer and then redirected into our SDQ. Note that the FIFO order of each ring buffer will be preserved in our SDQ. Because the print FIFO order and also because safe timers will send the barriers to all the rings when timeout occurs, safe timer can ensure that when barriers are processed, heartbeats arrived before timeout must have been processed as well. With our barrier mechanism, as long as the heartbeats arrived in operating system before timeout, safe timer will not report timeout, no matter how long heartbeat processing could be delayed. In the following slides, I will present a safe timer solution for the receiver side. The key idea of this solution is to block the sender when heartbeat sending is slow. This idea of killing a sender when it is slow is not new. In practice, existing solutions usually ask a specific component, such as a watchdog, to actively kill the sender when certain events cannot be accomplished in time. Unfortunately, when considering processing delay, these solutions won't work. Because the killing operation could be delayed itself, which will leave the sender still alive after the receiver has reported the failure. And if this happens, accuracy will be validated. Our SafeTimer adopts a passive solutions by utilizing the idea of output commit. A slow sender may continue processing, but as long as other nodes do not observe these effects of processing, the slow sender is indistinguishable from a failed sender. To implement this idea, SafeTimer sender module maintains a timestamp called tvalid, which indicates the time before which it is safe to send packets. When the sender sends packets successfully as defined by the black box timeout protocol, SafeTimer will extend the tvalid to the sending deadline of next interval. Whenever the sender is about to send a packet, SafeTimer will compare the current time with this tvalid. And if current time is larger than tvalid, SafeTimer will discuss these packets. By combining these solutions on both sides, SafeTimer can achieve that when receiver reports a timeout, the sender must have been blocked or failed. Because SafeTimer does not require any timing assumptions about the white box, as a result, users do not need to include the maximum delay of the white box part into timeout. To implement our SafeTimer, we need to address a number of implementation challenges. Due to time limitation, I will not describe them in today's talk, and you are very welcome to read our paper for detail. Our evaluation tries to answer the following questions. Can SafeTimer achieve the expected accuracy property despite the long delays in operating system and application? And what's the overhead of SafeTimer? To answer the first question, we inject delays or jobs at a different layer on both sender and receiver side. And we compare SafeTimer to vanilla timeout implementation, which will send and receive heartbeats with user space thread. The results show that SafeTimer can achieve accurate failure detection, but the vanilla implementation can't. This table summarizes all the events we injected in the Linux networking stack. First, let's look at the results when heartbeats are delayed or dropped on the receiver side. Regarding the vanilla implementation, because the receiver will not receive heartbeats in time, it will not report timeout, which is inaccurate because the sender is still alive. On the other hand, because our barrier mechanism, SafeTimer will not report timeout, which is accurate. Now, let's look at the results of when heartbeats are delayed on the sender. For the vanilla implementation, the sender will still be alive, even though the receiver has reported the timeout, which is inaccurate. For SafeTimer, because its sender module will block the sender when it failed to send out the heartbeats, SafeTimer provide the accurate failure detection result. Let's now answer the second question about the overhead. SafeTimer incurs additional work for packet processing, for example, checking sending time on the sender and redirecting heartbeats back on the receiver. The barrier mechanism is only triggered when timeout occurs, so it won't incur overhead in common case. To measure the overhead of SafeTimer, we apply SafeTimer to a ping-pong micro benchmark as suggested by previous work, as well as benchmark tools for HDFS and Ceph. For the ping-pong benchmark, when packet size is larger than 4 kilobytes, the overhead is negligible. And when packet size is smaller, for example, 8 bytes, SafeTimer will introduce small overhead up to 2.7%. We also test the SafeTimer with HDFS and Ceph benchmark tools on a 4-node setup, and we didn't observe any statistically significant overhead, probably because the packet size used in these systems are larger. Before the end of my talk, I will briefly discuss some related works. Synchronous systems such as HDFS, CEPH, they rely on the accuracy of failure detection for correctness, and therefore they have to use a long timeout. CEPH timer is mainly designed for this type of systems to reduce their timeout intervals without sacrificing accuracy. Asynchronous systems like Spanner, Zookeeper, they use Pegasus-like protocols to achieve correctness. However, they can still benefit from CEPH timer, which can help to reduce the cost of unnecessary failure recovery. Falcon and its following work implement a failure detectors without timeout. They view the whole communication channel as a white box and install probes at different layers. However, this approach requires intrusive modification to the routing layer and only works when the routers are under the control of the users. And to solve this issue, Falcon used timeout as a backup. Another branch of work related to CEPH timer is real-time operating system. If we can provide a real-time guarantee for heartbeat processing in the white box, our problem will be trivial. This technique can definitely help, but we found that they still cannot provide a hard real-time guarantee because achieving so requires us to formally prove the worst-case execution time of packet processing, which is hard. And fundamentally, achieving strict timing guarantee is opposed to communities operating systems principle of resource sharing and high concurrency. And finally, we give up on this direction and assume that the delays in operating system and applications can be arbitrarily long, and the output of our investigation is CEPH timer. To summarize, CEPH timer achieves accurate timeout detections despite arbitrary processing delays in operating systems and application. As a result, users can set shorter timeout intervals without sacrificing accuracy, and the overhead of CEPH timer is small. This is all my talk today. Thanks for your time. Do you have any question?
A clarifying question. When you make the statement that it can achieve this regarding in spite of arbitrary processing delays,
yeah,
would it be more accurate to say in spite of arbitrary network processing delays? Because really, you're only bounding this into the network. You're not dealing with, let's say, garbage collection on one of the services.
Actually, I agree with you. Your statement is more clear. So it's about the processing delay. It's
processing just in the network space.
You are right.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Alexander Tamas from Akronis. In what terms you measure your overhead in volume of network? In size of the additional data to be sent through the network, in latency or in CPU load? In what terms you mentioned here?
What's the
overheat for the implementation? You say that it's small, 2%. If you can rotate back a couple slides.
Which slides do you?
Wait. Where is the overheat is stated? Okay, overhead.
Overkit.
Overhead.
Overhead.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. The overhead here.
Yes. In what? How you measure it?
So we measure the throughput and latency with different size of packet size with different numbers of threads, and for the maximum throughput and for the latency with different packet size with different thread numbers, we measure that the maximum overhead is up to 2.7.
For the packets, number of packets, volume. But did you measure the CPU overheat?
We didn't measure that.
Because I think that your implementation in the heavy load systems will trash caches because you need to move the data from the CPU-based queues to the arbitrary queue, and definitely making the CPU load
I agree with you. It's better if we can also measure the overhead on CPU. But I will do that. And currently, I guess that the overhead will not be large.
Yeah, and I think that if you try to do it on the real load, not in the emulated, then you will receive significantly better, I mean, more exact estimation, because this one, I cannot say that it's good enough. Just a comment.
Okay, thanks.
Hi, Jason Hennessy from NetApp. I was wondering if you could talk a bit about how often the delays are actually in the packet processing versus in the network itself, and if there are certain workloads that where you would see those types of delays.
Is your question that what is the so you are talking about this over latency in the communication channel here?
Well, so my question is more like how often are the timeouts due to too much busyness on the host side versus the network itself being slow or damaged?
Actually, we didn't think about it in this way. We think about that the delays in because to achieve accurate timeout detection, which is necessary for the synchronous systems, the delays in the white box part, operating systems and applications, the delay, maximum delay is long, can up to several minutes here or several seconds. So we think that this delay is significant enough. But we it's better if we can know that how much is the possibility that heartbeat timeout happens for the network part or the white box part, it will be better. But we believe that by using SafeTimer, we can shorten the timeout intervals significantly.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.